Okay, let's begin. Welcome. My name is Steve van Houtrum. I am Dutch, as you probably can hear from my accent. But I am not working for Microsoft, so just to get that clear. I'm a Link MVP. I work as an independent consultant and trainer, and I work with mainly with Link, also a little bit with Exchange. Because I have a telephony background, I've been asked to provide my expertise in some hosting scenarios, and because of that, I propose this session because I think there are some things that a lot of people are into, and they're not always very clear if you look at the resources that are available. We also have, luckily, to have Roy King and Clinton Dickey. They're here. They will handle the open Q&A. So maybe some of you have questions for them. Maybe you were at the keynote. Maybe you already had other questions prepared, so they're here for you. We have an extended Q&A, so that will be about half an hour. Just to be sure, we also have asked the expert later today, and there are also multiple opportunities to ask questions at the Microsoft Pavilion. So feel free to come there. All right, so the agenda. We'll start with an overview of the Link hosting scenarios. I will talk a little bit more about the Link hosting pack. I've done a couple of deployments with that, and it can be a little bit of a challenge if you have had that same experience, and you know what I mean. And after that, the open Q&A. So let's look at who here has experience already with deploying Link hosting. Okay, I would say about 3/3. Who has used the hosting pack for that, the multi-tenant version? Only a couple. Oh, okay, that's interesting. Who is interested in using the hosting pack? Okay, it's getting less and less. Interesting. All right, so good. But we have multiple options to do that. Single tenant, so that's basically what you would have in an on-premises deployment, right? So they call that an enterprise deployment to single tenant or dedicated hosting. That can be physical or virtual. Of course, you can virtualize your Link deployment. And sometimes they refer to that as multi-tenant or shared hosting, but because you share the physical server. But I would say that multi-tenant is a little bit different. Multi-tenant means the really shared hosting. So you have one Link setup, one Link environment with multiple tenants in there. So that's the shared hosting, and that's where the Link hosting pack comes in. That's the only officially supported way by Microsoft to have a multi-tenant environment. So there are other creative solutions out there, but this is the only official support way. And a very specific scenario is the partner-hosted productivity cloud. That is a little bit out of the scope of this, but I wanted to mention it anyway. So the feature parity, when it comes to the features, if you compare single-tenant to multi-tenant to Link Online, single-tenant basically is Link Server 2013. So you have the same functionality that you have in the on-premises product. You have the same update mechanism. So if an update is released for Link 2013, it will also be available for that environment. One of the, let's say, challenges that you may run into is that updates not only provide you fixes for bugs that are there, but also new features. And that can be a bit of a surprise every now and then for Link administrators, because quite often the Link client updates are deployed by using the Office update mechanism. Then all of a sudden, the Link user will see an additional tab or whatever in their client, and they will call you and ask what that's all about. And that's maybe not something that you are responsible for. So it's good to keep track of that. If you look at Link Hosting Pack, Link Hosting Pack, short LHP, is now in second version, so that's why it says LHP V2. V1 was based on Link 2010, and V2 is based on Link 2013. If you look at Link Online, the mainly differences are, well, voice related, so maybe I should phrase it a little bit different. Things like PSTN dial out and, for instance, integration with UM Online. That is a little bit different in hosting pack if you compare that to Link Online. And the Link on premises, if you compare the multi tenant version of Link with the Link on premises, there is quite a feature gap there. There is actually a complete spreadsheet that explains the details for that, and I've put a link to that in the resources at the end of the slide that you get in the handout. So, and that's called the features comparison matrix. So, let's have a look at the link hosting pack. A link hosting pack is something that I think it takes, you have to make some decisions before you start using a hosting pack. Are you going to use the multi-tenant version or not? Are you going to use single dedicated hosting instead? It's very important to know the difference in features. So I'll just give you a quick recap of the new features that are in version 2 compared to version 1. Some of the documentation that's out there on the internet still mentions version 1. So a lot of third-party blogs actually say that they are talking about V2, but they're actually talking about V1. So you have to be very careful with that. That's why I gave you the recap of that. The planning phase is, I think, the most important phase in deploying Link multi-tenant. So that's why we spend a bit more time. And then there are some very specific steps in the deployment of the Link hosting package you need to know, and I'll cover them too. And recently there have some some new announcements around Link hosting, and we'll cover them at the end. So the main thing, difference with V2 is that we are now we have now a lot of features of Link 2013. So that is good, and it'll be getting more and more feature parity. So that is very important. So just to give you a couple of examples, in Link hosting pack version 2, there is now the mobile VoIP to PC audio, instant messaging and presence, so IMAP, and voice, so audio with Skype. IM archiving is also an option. Very important, I think, for multi-tenant solutions is the IP desk phone support. So there were some options for V1, but they are getting better and better with V2. The Link attendant client, strangely enough, they still call it the 2010 version, so there is not a new version of the Link attendant console, but you can still use it, and it's actually now officially supported. It was not supported with the previous version of the hosting pack. And very important, I think, for telephony is delegation, or what boss admin, and the team call functionality that is there. Also, something to consider is that quite often for hosting deployments, you probably need to look at third-party solutions for provisioning, for self-service portal for the end customer, also for support like for things like dial plans, voice policies, because they don't have a tenant scope. I will talk a bit more about that later on. Functionality like call park, E911. It's not important where I come from, but it's important for here. And the response groups. Response groups can be a bit of a challenge, so I'll cover that a bit more later on. So the planning considerations, one of the first choices that you need to make is, are you going to provide dedicated or hosted sharing? So you need to be very aware of the features that will be missing, because it can come off as a surprise if you deploy Link multi-tenant. The update mechanism is very different. So if you have deployed a Link hosting pack, it uses its own installer to install the updates, and it basically only installs the first roll-up, and that's it. So I know that a lot of people use the Microsoft update mechanism to deploy the Link updates to their hosting environment, but that's not how you should do that. So we can ask questions about that later in the Q&A, but basically you're way behind with your updates. But that is something to consider, especially because we get new features in those updates. That's something to be aware of. The deployment procedure is, well, let's call it unique. It's pretty special, the deployment procedure. It looks similar to the on-premises deployment, but it's actually, there are some steps that you really need to know. I'll cover them later on. And again, the support that you may get. So if you create your own multi-tenant environment, without using the hosting pack, then you don't have official support by Microsoft. It doesn't say it's not going to work, but it's just something to be aware of there. Other considerations, maybe you want to look at third-party solutions that are out there. One of the resources for that is the Pinpoint website that Microsoft has. You can find partners that provide solutions for that. Provisioning means creating users, enabling them for link, maybe also for other Microsoft product that you may want to host in your environment. They will also give you additional features like support, official support for response groups, a call park, and things like that. And they will help with the whole provisioning mechanism. So that can be a time saver. So there are alternatives. You can create your own PowerShell scripts if that's what you like. But that's usually, usually can spend the time better in other ways. So again, be very aware of the feature disparity that you may run into. And one thing that I see quite often, that's why I've put bold letters there, quite often people try to upgrade their existing link on-premises deployment to the hosting pack. And that's not something that you should do. So you should start from scratch. That is very important to keep that in mind. The planning considerations are still continuing. So there are some tools that Microsoft has. There is the network capacity calculator spreadsheet. Now it's version 2. You can use that for network sizing. So basically, it takes the information from the capacity planning documentation. It allows you to create user profiles, personas, as they call them. And based on that, you get a network load per user per location. And that gives you an indication what your network capacity should be. It's actually used as a readiness tool to see if your WAN connection is ready for link. Of course, there are more advanced network assessment options that you probably should look at. But this is a tool that is supported for both link on-premises and link hosting. The topology builder is something that you can use. No problem with that. The planning tool, I like the planning tool a lot, but it's not supported for link hosting. It's a little bit strange because one of the scenarios is actually 100% external users, and that sounds a lot like link hosting, but it's not an officially supported tool. So the topology that it gives you is not something that is compliant with the best practices for link hosting. Doesn't mean you can't use it, but that's another thing. I actually like to use it. So the hardware requirements are no different from Link 2013. And that is, who is familiar with the deployment guide for Link hosting, for Link Multipack? Who has seen it? So have you written it, maybe? Or so there are only a couple of people. So yeah, the documentation is, of course, very important. You can download the deployment guides, but the most recent version of the deployment guide is actually only available online. So in the TechNet library, where you can also find the Link on-premises documentation, so there is a gap there, so you have to be aware of that. And some of the information in the deployment guide is actually still based on Link 2010. So the hardware requirements that are specified there are different from Link 2013, and that's not because of a difference in hosting and on-premises, but it's because it's not how it should be. So that's something to be aware of. So essentially, a lot of the things, a lot of the steps that you need to take for deploying link hosting are the same as deploying link on-premises. There are also integration considerations. Maybe your tenant, so your customer that's going to use the multi-tenant environment, also has an on-premises environment. And that is where things get complicated, because maybe you need to integrate their AD, Active Directory, with your hosting environment. That is complicated. And again, that is something where third-party solutions can provide really excellent solutions. And also, one of the things that is interesting for a Microsoft partner is to be different from what Microsoft does themselves. So in Link Online, there is Link Online, of course, you're aware of that. And of course, things will change in Link Online, but there are still things in that are not in Link Online that you can provide. So integration with SMS, with other video conferencing systems, maybe a line of business integration. I think of solutions like contact centers and other software that you can integrate with. So that can be an interesting solution that Microsoft does not provide and that you can. Well, and things may change, but right now there is no SIP trunk in Link Online. So that is, of course, something that you can provide. Actually, a lot of hosting parties are telephony providers themselves. So that is a good match, of course, to provide a telephony service from their own network there. So that is, I think that can be pretty compelling. So let's have a look at some of the design changes that that are there. And design changes, I think autocorrect got me there. It should be Office Web Apps, not Outlook Web Apps. But it's, sorry about that. Topology changes, SQL mirroring, and Outlook Web Apps. So, Office Web Apps. Sometimes you confuse yourself. So let's just look at pictures, maybe that helps. So this is directly taken from the deployment guide, and it gives you a good overview about some of the things that you need to consider. So let's see if the pointer works. You can see the Office Web App server there. Who is familiar with that, the Office Web App server? Also known as the WAG server in the early days, but we try to avoid that, but still pops up. So it's actually a SharePoint functionality. We really need it. And I see a lot of people that forget it in a link deployment, not only in a hosting environment, also in an on-premises environment. If you use the planning tool, then it will say, hey, you need a web app server. But yeah, that's not what everyone does. So what do you know what it is, the web app server, what it does for you? So yeah, exactly. So if you want to upload a PowerPoint and use that in your conference, then you need to use the Office Web App server for that. So not something to forget. Exchange UM, so if you want to provide voicemail to your tenants, then you need to have Exchange UM in place. It's not mandatory. And actually, if you look at the deployment card, Exchange is only mentioned, well, lightly, or only referenced as the Exchange UM server. If you need to provide voicemail services, you actually need to have a full-blown Exchange environment, or not just a UM server. There's more to Exchange than just that. Again, that may vary, so maybe you don't want to provide voicemail capabilities. Archiving capabilities, and here you can see your front-end servers and your back-end servers. So this is also something that has changed. So when Microsoft released Link 2013, they used a lot of bold letters to say, yeah, we're only supporting mirroring. And they actually updated that support mechanism statement in, I think it was August. But a lot of people are not aware of that. So if you have SQL clusters, you can absolutely continue to use them, by all means. And so there are a lot of companies out there that use that. So there's no reason to migrate to SQL mirroring just for Link. And again, the hardware requirements that you see here are not how they should be. So that's why I put them up there. So that it should be exactly the same as Link 2013. That's basically twice the amount of memory and also some changes in the amount of cores that you want to have. And this is actually, it doesn't look exciting what it is, because this is the DMZ. And so this would be your internet over here. And this is a lot simpler than it used to be. So who has worked with Hosting Pack version 1? Was done. Okay, I see 3 people. Wow, that's not much. So that was pretty, I don't know how to say that politely, but it was, let's say it interesting. So because you had to have your front-end server in your DMZ, right, with one NIC, and that was totally different from the Link on-premises deployment. So this looks a lot like a Link on-premises deployment. The main difference is that your users are not there, but they are here. So all your users are external. That's the dream of a lot of IT admins, I know that. But that's that is the main difference with the version 1 when it comes to topology. And it's a lot simpler to deploy and a lot more compliant with what you may already have when it comes to internet access. Also, really important is your reverse proxy. Again, something that some people are aware of or other not is that the reverse proxy solution of Microsoft, that TMG, is still something that you can use. There's totally nothing wrong with that. But there are more and more other solutions out there. And you see, I just referred to the Interop website for Link. They have a section about reverse proxy solutions there. And more and more solutions are there. So you can use RARR, also known as the pirate solution. You can also use, of course, a hard load balancer for that. Is that something a lot of companies would have in their DMZ? And your Edge service. Your Edge server is something that you really need if you have internet access for regular on-premises deployments and for host defining as well. So again, just follow the Link 2013 guidelines there when it comes to the sizing of that. So basically, what a deployment guide does is give you a solution or an example for a smaller sized multi-tenant environment, how the topology should look, and what hardware you need to use for that. And the best practice that Microsoft has is to use a minimum of 3 front-end servers, regardless of the number of users that you want to or need to facilitate there. And of course, we are talking about telephony, so you need to have some form of PSTN connectivity. Usually that would be Citrix, I think, but it still, of course, can be other PSTN connections too. And that usually means in a hosting environment, a session border controller. So that is an example of the deployment guide. So let's have a look at the deployment considerations there. It looks a lot like Link, but it's not totally the same. It has different media. So the only way that you can get that, obtain that, is go to the volume licensing website and download it there. It's not the same as the regular Link media. The first steps of the deployment are actually the same, so the AD extensions, etc. But after that, you need some additional components that are not provided in the regular source material. And the really important thing there is, I mentioned that before, is the Link server update installer.exe that is provided. And you need that to install the updates that are supported for Link hosting pack. So if you use the regular Microsoft update mechanism, then you actually do get the updates, but that's not supported. So that is something to be careful with. So how does it look? How does it work, multi-tenant enablement? So I've just captured some highlights here. I actually have written an article a couple of years ago about that, that you can read on the Nextop blog, that you probably know. So if you want to know the more technical details, you can read it there, but I'll just give you an overview. So if you extend the AD, if you follow the deployment steps for the hosting pack, it will create a dedicated OU for your organizational unit in your AD called OCS Tenants. You can change that or move that, but that's how it is by default. And you can create a structure in there with resellers and tenants, or just only tenants, depending on what you want. Then what basically happens is that all your tenants will have their own organizational unit. That organizational unit has a GUID, a global unique identifier. And that GUID is used as their grouping ID and their tenant ID. And grouping ID is based, sorry, is used for address book scoping. So if you browse in your Link client, you only see your own colleagues from your own virtual organization. That's pretty important because you don't want to see the other organizations that are in the same hosting environment. And that is something that's also available in the regular Link version, by the way. So you still can use grouping ID in the Link on-premises version if you prefer that. If that's enough for you, fine. That makes your life a whole lot easier, to be honest. The next thing is the tenant ID. And the tenant ID is basically, I use the term communication scoping, it's maybe not an official term, but it basically means you're only able to communicate to users within your own tenant environment. Yes, you can have federation with other tenants or other Link environments, that is all possible, but by default, that is how it is scoped. And you can also assign policies based on the tenant ID. So a lot of the policies that are available, the conferencing policies and things like that, have an option to scope it at the tenant level. So not just a global site pool user, but also tenant. So that is very important because the options that are in Link that do not have a tenant scope are not supported for Link hosting. Things like DALPLAN, that's pretty important, actually. So that is not available in the regular version of Link. So the difference here, grouping ID is available in all versions of Link, tenant ID only in the hosting pack. Who has worked with simple URLs before? in hosting or in regular on-premises, that is a little bit, I would use the word challenging. So if you look at the documentation, it's not directly clear how you should format that. And it is, the attribute is called MSRTC SIP domain URL map, but it's in the slide, so you don't have to remember that. But it's basically the main thing that goes wrong quite often is this. So you do need to have HTTPS in front of that. So I see a lot of deployments that I need to troubleshoot. Maybe I shouldn't give this information away, but so that's forget this bit in the simple URL. So that's actually pretty important. So and another thing that you can see here is that quite often you would use this format. So you would use a hosting domain and then force just tenant domain. And that will save you a lot of certificate grief. Another thing that is really important, and that is actually different in Link Hosting Pack version 2 compared to version 1, is that how they filter the simple URLs, how they filter the SIP domains is now different. They use the this bit here, internal domain allow all domains, is part of the topology. You need to manually change that. Or script that, that's of course an option. And so what basically happens is that you use the backend database to keep track of the SIP domains that are allowed. Something not to forget. So recently we have seen some updates, and there is now a response group white paper that basically says, well, it's still not supported to have response groups, but it usually works. So it's interesting. So there are also third-party solutions out there that will provide things like a portal for the end customer to administer their own response groups. So that's the ACD for telephony people with Microsoft users. And that is, I think, compelling to have. So even if you use response groups according to the guidelines provided in the white paper, they actually only provide one specific routing mechanism in there. There is no way for the end user, the end customer, to administer that. I've said it before, but the deployment guides is now part of the TechNet library, so that the benefit of that is it's easier to update. But the negative side of that is if you download the most recent version, then it's not the most current version that is there. So you need to use the online version there. And also something that I think is interesting is that more and more IP phones are now supported. More vendors are now providing phones. One of the things that I come across is that I love the Link product. I really do. And I think it's a great product. But I also see customers that just want to replace the PBX. So they don't want to go all the way. And that is something that is very common in hosting scenarios. So I used to work in the telephony, and back then you had Centrex. So maybe some of you know that. It's not very new what we're doing here, but it's another name, but that's fine. So for those kinds of customers, it can be very compelling to have a very basic IP phone connecting to the Link environment. Yes, you're not using all the features of Link, but yeah, that can be fine too, and maybe later, they will start discovering the collaboration features of Link there. Okay. So let's move to the Q&A. So I heard that Clinton is not good. So yeah, so we have a microphone over here, so everything is recorded. So if you would be so kind to use the microphone, if you're not willing to do that, then I will repeat the question and it will be recorded too. So we'll get there. So fire away.
Thanks. All right, and let's give a hand to Stephen. Thank you very much for the insight. But we, as I say, he's not a, wanted to provide another face from Microsoft, myself, Roy King. I'm in the product marketing team, and my colleague Clinton is in the partner engineering group, the PM for the Link Hosting Pack and our other hosting services. So yeah, please, great. Doesn't look like there are any questions. We can wrap up. Let me
call him out or come up to the mic. Your first privilege if you walk up, otherwise I'll call on you.
Excellent. Regarding the updates, we've been doing updates over link on-premise quarterly or even more often. I don't think I've seen an update since the rollout. And one of the updates was enabling Skype. Yeah, you mentioned Skype in the slide, but I don't think that works in the current release. I mean, you can do online Office 365, but there's no Skype connection as far as I know.
Yeah, so if you follow so two things. Let me go to the updates first, and I'll tell you about Skype second.
Excellent.
And I'll apologize for my voice. I lost it last night. It's come back a little this morning, so I felt like I could show up and represent. Yeah, too much partying in Vegas, I guess. But so first of all, with updates, this has actually been something that I think many hosters have wanted to understand, is that even if I take, feature functionality away, just to say, hey, Microsoft put something out there that has a security patch, improves conferencing, whatever it might be, hey, when's Link Hosting back going to get the advantage of that? The strategy that we have now is that we have commitment from our management to support at least two updates a year. The first one that we'll roll out will be at the end of March, which will be CU4, which was just released on server in January, I believe. And then we'll continue to keep pace. Anytime we have a security update that goes along with that, we'll automatically do that. That sort of gets priority. If you're familiar with the way that Microsoft does security patching, we tend to offer an update. The bad people out in the world tend to reverse engineer our stuff and then go look for the people that have not updated that or put that update out there. So that'll be a priority for us, but we'll also look at feature functionality to be able to add that in. Again, if there's an improvement in conferencing that makes the quality better, we want Link Hosting Pack to be able to take advantage of that as well. So the first one, in about a month, we'll have that at the end of March, which will be CU4. Specific to Skype, we actually have partners that are doing it. You can actually follow the same instructions that are online for how Link Server on-premise is able to federate with Skype. It works exactly the same way. And it's not a feature functionality. What it was really the difference between when we released the deployment guide back in June or May, when we said it's third party, versus when we, if you look at the deployment guide now, or you look at the comparison chart, it says it works, has the green light, is really a configuration issue. You just had to figure out how to do it. And so it doesn't take anything magical. It doesn't take any special new code. And if you follow the instructions that are online in the for on-prem, it works for LHP as well. There used to be. I think that we worked around that. That was a lot of the configuration that we were able to do. I mean, we're still working on it, and then maybe the next question that might come is, when does video work? We're not there yet. I would say the time in P right now, or instant messaging and presence right now. We're still working on it and working on video, but I do know that there are certain partners, or several partners that, I should say several, there's a few partners that have gotten this to work using the exact same instructions as on-prem, so. What else? Do you know offhand?
So what I try to say is that you cannot just deploy UM by itself. So you need to have a full-blown Exchange environment. Yeah, so the same SPLA will apply to. Exactly. And that's usually what you want, because you want to provide a full solution, right?
Yeah.
Call forward, something else, and then you take off that call forward, call forward no answer, disappears, and it doesn't rather go to a multi-tenant exchange, but like smaller companies who are building link solutions, it's very difficult to build a new link solution and do a multi-tenant exchange solution at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's good feedback. I know in working with my counterpart in the exchange team, it's not a discussion that, you know, it comes up rarely, right? It comes up a lot to figure that out and how we think about our overall hosting model. So I think part of what, you know, Roy and I, in some of the answers that I'm anticipating questions for, you know, I think some of that is around, hey, what is our strategy around hosters overall? Not just in Link, not just in Exchange, not just in Azure. What are we thinking all up? And I think that some of that is still being defined. I think we're trying to figure out who we are. We've got a new CEO. I love Gurdeep's message today, which is this is a bright new world. We're going to approach it a little bit differently, but you know, right at the heart of that is definitely the slot pricing that goes with that. So,
yeah, just to touch on that a little bit. So appreciate the feedback is clear. I understand the problem, certainly the need. What we are trying to do, we'd be very clear about the strategy. Is that we know we think. Well, actually, we know we have evidence, particularly on the exchange side, but when you sell Link and Exchange, partners sell more than they would have just selling one product. And so we're seeing a lot of advantages from being able to offer that unified, that complete unified thing. And even to say the productivity suite all up is really where our best value comes out. And it can be difficult to sell a customer who's price resistant on that full stack value. But that's our job. I mean, that's the harder problem that we want to overcome and solve, because we know that putting all these pieces together makes a much better solution. So we're going to continue to, you know, that's still going to continue to be the sort of the lead motion of trying to drive that truly unified experience, including through the partner channel. Yeah, they're definitely at different maturity stages, and that can create, we're definitely aware of that conflict. And yeah, that's a good question. I think as part of Clint mentioned, what we're trying to orient ourselves around now is this notion around some of the more common user scenarios of people who are starting on premises with some existing stuff that may run great, may not, but they've got something there, and they're looking at moving, in some cases, both to a partner-hosted solution and some aspects in Office 365. And so the guidance that we're trying to put together some guidance right now, and this is, I think, really good feedback for a particular use case we should address. But looking at, we do want to provide more prescriptive guidance on what we at least recommend doing in that circumstance. But we appreciate it's not, you know, customers aren't always ready to make a big move and all of that. But generally, the strength of the broader motion is working well of being able to offer that, you know, communication, collaboration as a service, as a package, and you get the same cost advantages. And again, we're seeing that even in the smaller market, those decision makers from the IT side and network and telephony side are starting to have to work together, and the CFO is telling them they've got to start saving money. And so that is, you know, I would say, very dependent, or looking at what you can do as well to lead that conversation and sort of pull customers even with their existing environment. By offering them that full package. But thanks for this.
Yeah, actually, just one thing to follow up with that. One thing you can do to make that easier is allow CSMO's posted voicemail policy to work with other, like hoster.hoster or hoster on-prem as opposed to hoster365. We tried it and it doesn't work in any other way. There's the secret sauce in 365 exchange that you can't get access to. So there's a way that if you have on-prem or hosting provider 2365, you can rewrite the voicemail policy to Office 365. If you go host to hoster, like just even like one, you know, one on one exchange one domain to link another, that doesn't work. It basically boils down to there's something in the edge server at online. Yeah, Jason Shake. Jason's nodding his head there.
Yeah.
certainly. So we appreciate the money you've spent. I hope you appreciate the time and investment we've put in to this product. V1 was very much a pilot. We all learned from that. And we appreciate the, you know, sticking with that, and we think we did a much better job with V2. And we're continuing to evaluate sort of the success of that. I'll be, again, to be completely honest, what we're working on this from two sides, and I don't have a very clear roadmap or anything to share today about a VNext and what capabilities and how it would be supported and all of that. But we're working at it from both ends. From the Link server side, it's becoming more, we're trying to do better virtualization, it's becoming more economical. We're looking at how to create, like, Exchange. Can we put multi-tenancy into the core server? That's a very hard set of problems and challenges that we're working through from that side down. We're also looking at the Link Online opportunity and how that's getting more feature-rich, we're getting more coverage, we're getting more extensibility, and that too is coming up from the bottom end and looking at, well, what can we do to extend that service, to better connect that with hosted service providers. So I don't know exactly today where that's gonna meet and what the next product path is gonna exactly look like. What I hope, again, I've done a lot of these sessions, and ultimately I say, you're not gonna listen to anything I say today. You just have to, we can only demonstrate, you know, our commitment by continuing to release products. As you said, we've got full support now to, you know, even though it was late, many of you are familiar with sort of a few months lag that we have between the single tenant and the multi-tenant support. So we are committed to continuing to provide the updates, the testing and validating security patches and all of that to keep this channel healthy as we go forward. And it's growing tremendously. So it's not in anybody's interest to try to squeeze you out or to not be able to support your business, because it's very much critical to our strategy going forward. And I'm sorry I don't have the more technical details or specific details about VNext. As I said, typically that's been a few months later after we've shared more about the next version of Link Server. And so certainly by WPC in July, I think we'll have a lot more clarity about that. Again, both from what we can offer partners on the Link Online side, as well as on the in the hosted server configuration. I might go ahead and address one of the other questions that came up at the.
So I'm assuming there's people in the room that I've that know me and I've worked with probably through email. I was telling Roy, I said that actually it's gonna be nice to get a few faces with names. The other thing I look at is, if you know my background, I actually joined the Link product group almost on the day that we released LHP V2, which was 7 or 8 months ago, back in July. And from that point of view, I also look and say, okay, you know, people come at me and say, what's that next feature? Hey, I really want to, you know, response groups came up in the slides that Stephen presented. And thinking through that, what I see is a convergence. I really see the fact that Microsoft, and I know this was kind of day one when Gurdeep came in, is that, you know, we have a lot of different platforms out there, and from a hosting perspective or from a partner perspective, that makes it difficult for you guys to sort of figure out what's the right thing to offer, what's the right price point, how do I make the features work. And so part of the work that I'm doing in partnership with Roy is to look at it and say, okay, how do we simplify this? How do we get a better feature set? How do we get a price point that makes sense from the, you know, all the way down to 25 users up to 500 or 1,000 users? So we hit that SMB space. And then how do we get the right feature set that makes that interesting as these customers look to move to the cloud? So I would say also, in addition to what you said in trying to figure out that strategy, is we're 7 months in. And unfortunately, I should say unfortunately, I think it's the right timeline, is that the number of active networks that are out there running LHP V2 is not a high number, right? But we see it growing. We see the interest. I can tell you my inbox sees the interest that's out there. So I know that it's going to be successful. But we need to factor that in and be able to say, okay, as we think about things like Gurdeep mentioned PSTN and Link Online, we think about that and say, okay, how does that? What's the play for partners there? How does that work with LHP, you know, existing infrastructure? How do I think about countries that maybe don't allow online? You know, if you look at Germany and very stringent data sovereignty rules, what's our strategy there? So we're trying to think about it holistically, and I think the plea from Roy, and I would echo it, is we need a little more time to figure it out, and our goal is to be able to come back to you guys for the partners that will be there at WPC to come back and say, here's our roadmap, here's what we're going to do.
Yes. Clinton, you spoke just about the Link Online being able to provide PSTN access. Yeah. That's a serious concern to partners, because now we're going to ask you a question. I haven't seen
your differentiation and opportunity for growth and scale. So to be clear, on the announcement and the solution from PSTN, which I'm sure you all sort of noticed a difference in tone and scope from our statement last year around moving enterprise voice and the full link server capability set into online. So to give you some more context around that, we started at the end of last year working with some carriers, primarily in Europe, to begin to add PSTN services to Link Online. As I said, that's the end user calling capabilities. At this point, there is no roadmap or any feature for any of the additional enterprise voice features that are in Link Online. So none of the administration, none of the response groups, none of that. And again, looking a year ago, I thought we would be much further along. Everyone thought we'd be much further along with Link Online, and that again, all of that additional features and stuff would accrue into the hosting pack. So, I will say that as you saw today, the focus has shifted to being one around reach. We want to enable global reach via the cloud, and we mean that in both the private and public cloud environments, from ours and yours. As I said, we're starting today to bring PSTN services into Link Online with our partners. We hope to be making that available to all U.S. customers early in 2015. So the other thing that I'll say on that is that it is not a goal, or we're not driving on a hard path to just get all of the features into Link Online. And the reason for that is just doing that isn't good enough. Access over the public internet is only going to be so good. And again, one of the great advantages that the hosting can provide is not just the additional features and functionality, which we can't and won't expose in Link Online for the foreseeable future. All of the other, quality of service and management and those things we are continuing to see is very, very valuable for customers across the segments. So we believe what we've seen in the past is that our announcements and our drive around putting stuff in Office 365 is a rising tide for all partners. We're going to drive more and more people, as we said, to get out of their habit of thinking, oh yeah, I've got my server hardware in the closet and it runs fine and I'll just stick with that. They're missing all of the advantages of moving to a service platform. And especially an extensible and broad one that partners can offer. So we're gonna make Link Online better. That's certainly true. But it's only gonna meet the needs of a certain set of customers. And I would like to ask you, again, not to look at Link Online and Office 365 as just a competitive product, but as another platform for you to wrap around your services and be part of that solution that you offer. A lot of things, as Gurdeep sort of talked about these secular trends that, even though we're following them, it's not our decision. We don't get to dictate to the market how we're commoditization of server hosting. Amazon, Google, everybody's driving that to, near zero. So let us help you by being that global cloud provider for that segment of customers or those use cases where it is expensive. It's more expensive for you to do it than necessary. Figure out a way of partnering with us and being able to include that in your service rather than seeing it as a one-to-one competitor.
I'm Microsoft ready for the influx of additional calls and support in case
you win. Oh, you're not kidding. Absolutely. Let me put it this way in terms of our perspective about it, specifically the PSTN offer and its relationship to voice and all of that. So on the one hand, we believe that what a lot of small business customers are looking for is that very simple, integrated, standard offer that's just got the basic features. And that is the sort of the target that we have today and will continue to have with our partners for that offer. So it's very much going to be a team, small group, small business home office, small office typed offer. For any customer that is looking for a full enterprise voice solution, we're not going to be positioning Link Online for that. So for the next few years, it's a Link, hosted Link server, option of some point, which is the only way, and we'll be more clear with customers now than we were last year, that's the only way we can really deliver that full feature set for customers that want it, is using one of the server products, either managed or hosted. So that's going to continue, especially in the enterprise. It's very clearly the focus to stay on Link server and in the enterprise and a private cloud, generally, will remain our lead offer for some time.
Would it be a good strategy to actually officially communicate that, or license to that? So when you go to market, you say we will not support any enterprise customers.
With enterprise voice, I think, that's clarification. And we're going to have to do that. I mean, to the point of the support calls we would expect this minute people get and say, why can't I do XYZ? So it's very incumbent on us to make that
clear. Yeah, I think the one other thing that I would add is obviously my job is to really look at the, under the hood and think about it from a product group standpoint. And where my focus goes, and Roy challenges me on this all the time, is that as a hosting provider, if you're only looking at the world of hosting with concern to Link as hosting pack, you probably aren't looking at the full world. I mean, I don't think that Microsoft has shown any surprise, or it shouldn't be a surprise to you, that we're going to continue to invest in the cloud. Office 365 has been a very successful story for us. Not so much on Link, more on Exchange and a little bit on SharePoint, and then it's a smattering of Link, but growing, right? A growing business for us. The other thing I would say is that as you look at our server investments and what we do around enterprise hosting with Link Server, that's been a great business for us. Matter of fact, we're very successful because of our hosting partners in that space. So, if you think about Microsoft and it's kind of that age-old kind of skate where the puck isn't, I think as hosters, that has to be what your mindset is to say, okay, I have this great Link hosting pack, I can offer this functionality. When I think about other functionality and our job is to communicate to you guys in ample time that you can respond and say, okay, I know where Microsoft's going, how does that play with my strategy? What's my business gonna be? And I think you have every right to come back to us, especially at WPC, if you hear the same story from us, to call us out on that. But that's not our plan. Our plan is to come back with a very stringent roadmap and say, this is our expectation. Here's the role that we see partners playing in the long term. But I think that, your role in that is that you have to think about all the different assets that Microsoft is trying to invest in and think about that from your hosting strategy overall. Yeah, I think voice is definitely a different paradigm for us. It makes me laugh. You're right. If I get my email 20 seconds later, I don't really care, right? I didn't even know. I came out of the telephony world, and it amazes me that we think about, kind of this convergence now where, we think about Link across Wi-Fi. What is the advancements in Wi-Fi that's going to help us with quality of service? There's a bunch of things out there, right? Even in the public internet, what kind of pipe do you have that's going to make that a quality thing? So, I know there's a lot of work we're doing with both partners and within the product group to think about how do we make our network bandwidth more streamlined, more efficient? How do we make it more redundant? How do we think about loss of failure? Think about the SDN capability. Yeah, and I think the meat behind that is that they're looking at it and saying, well, crap, in the middle of a Link call, I can have video, app sharing, I can have voice, how do you prioritize that? Well, Microsoft and working with HP and some other partners said, you know, we'll start thinking about that in an intelligent way. So, yep.
I really hesitate to segment purely on the customer size because, again, a small law office will have, be willing to pay for premium services and do things that a very large manufacturing firm wouldn't. Obviously, I'd say we're, looking at specific, we're starting to get a little bit better about looking at verticals in particular industries, with healthcare, finance, government. And within there, you have populations that have, you've got the sort of keystone major players of an ecosystem that are large enterprises and have all of the requirements. But typically, they're also served by smaller vendors and a supply chain with that's much more capital constrained and much more, interested in a simple solution that will allow them to connect with that broader network. And that's where Link Online really shines. And again, meeting those really small office, home office type scenarios. But we don't typically segment, so under 200, if you want an answer that's not perfect, I'd say under 250 seats or users. But again, it's not it's not exactly how we approach it. I'll explain. I mean, I will say the greatest opportunity that I've seen, if I think generically, is in the maybe 200 to 2,000 seat space for the hosted platform. There's a lot of customers out there that are starting to move that aren't particularly served by the single tenant, very large enterprise deployments, and are not satisfied with a Link Online solution. But they've got there's a lot of business there, a lot of customers in that segment, which I think a hosted service is perfectly suited for. In the way back.
Yeah, Roy, can you talk about the remote call control? Is that something that we'll be able to still count on accessing those folks, or will you guys be removing those?
So I can't talk in it with any real world technical backing. I'll let Clint do that. And then I do have a policy statement. Generic canned statement that I can talk about.
I'd love to know what your policy statement is first before I go out on a limb here. So, I would say there's no investment being made to further that feature. I think that the
vision. No more investment to take it out either.
Right. Yeah. I think the idea is that with remote call control, there's some function out there being able to interoperate with the PBX or whatever it might be that you need that capability. Yeah, if you take our UC strategy and you really think more around this universal communications that Gurdeep talked about, we see the PBX as a dinosaur. And our customer bases are starting to say the same thing, right? They want to move to the cloud. As we do that, more and more features that keep you on-prem become less important to us. So I would say, yeah, absolutely no plan to pull it out, but I don't see us enhancing it in any way. So. Yep. So did I stick to policy? Good.
In that it's in the product today, support it. We're making no investments and have nothing to really share about it. We're certainly not encouraging anyone to go down that path. But as Clint sort of acknowledged, there would be definitely some work to do to deprecate it completely. And I don't know if that's in anyone's best interest either. So again, you're not going to see any evidence or any encouragement out of anyone from Microsoft to say you should go down that path, but it's there in the product. again, similar to the question about the roadmap, I don't know exactly where we're going to land. There is work invested, you know, under within the server itself to see what it would take to make that truly multi-tenant in the way that Exchange has. As I said, you know, again, but a lot of that also has dependencies on Link Online, and we're not quite as far with the Link Online development as we thought we would have been a year ago. So right now, that's still an open question. We will certainly want to see, you know, we're learning a lot from the from partners who are deploying it now. It's a small but growing very, very quick base, and that feedback and input is crucial over the next, you know, 6 months or so to help us refine that answer.
If I could just say one thing on that. So obviously I get a lot of email about when's V3, what is the roadmap and stuff like that. And I get why that's important, right? A customer signs up, they want to know where you're going to go. The way I look at it is to say, there's a feature set out there that the customers want, right? Your customers want XYZ features. We're trying to figure out how the best way to give you that, right? If in fact Link Online Codebase doesn't give us those features, response groups is a great example. How can we do that? What are other assets? We're making investments in Link Server, we're making investments in Link Online. Does it make sense to do some kind of piggyback? Is there a way we can be able to plug into those services through the cloud? How do partners play in that? What's the API structure? All those types of questions are what we're considering. And the reason why we're coming to you today is not so much to say, hey, we don't really know what we're doing. We're saying there's a lot of things we could do. We want to be able to drill down and be able to get down to like two or three really good solutions to say, you want to address this segment? Here's the strategy you should go forward with Microsoft to do that. And we're setting a goal for ourselves to be able to give you guys very concrete information this summer at WPC. I'll give you a two-part answer on that because I think it's fantastic. And we have, you know, I wouldn't say we've certified, but we've definitely gone through the paces and seen it working in a lab and that kind of stuff. We're very careful about certification in Microsoft because, and you guys know this better than I do, one network's never the same as the next, right? So we have to be careful about what we talk about that it works here in US, maybe it doesn't work in UK because of something different. Maybe there's a larger investment we can make to be able to make it global. But I will say this, is that we haven't seen the uptake from the third party. I've reached out to a couple different vendors around response groups, and they're kind of looking at it and saying, well, what's the viable market? And we're like, it's growing. There's a lot of interest. They're kind of in a wait and see. So I think that as we continue to grow the hosting business and continue to prove that, you know, customers want Link, I think the ecosystem will come with it. But it's been a bit of a challenge for us to beyond your basic functionality or, you know, call intercept, you know, E911 that was mentioned by Steven. Those are good ones to go after because you have to have them. But provisioning's been a really good one as well. But some of the other ones have been slow.
I'll make a quick shout out. Response groups are very expensive. Mm-hmm. For AC, a contact center in front of your multi-tenant solution, you're bumping up that price significantly for just a small subsection of that contact center that you're going to use. The further majority of cases.
Yeah.
That's why it's really good that a response group has become supported and actually work very well.
So I'll just give a shout out to a new catalog that we've released on link.com. It's called the Solutions Catalog. It's right there from the homepage. But it has a list of all of the qualified applications for Link. And as we say in the lab, we know many of them, many of the partners are supporting the multi-tenant implementations as well. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so just given some of the uncertainties of roadmap for LHP, can you comment about, you know, partners, do you choose to enterprise and use it in a multi-tenant way, be a third party or what have you, on the notion of support, the notion of support versus sustained engineering, right? And so those are two different things. Sustained engineering meaning you guys are providing bug fixes, hot fixes, whereas support means, hey, I'm trying to get this stood up and I need somebody to engage with me to help get this to work at least as best we can, given how it's designed. Okay, can you comment on that for partners that are trying to make the decision?
Yeah, so we don't differentiate that way, unfortunately. I mean, that's the kind of the bottom line is that we look at support mainly because we feel that there are security holes that if you use what we call GALSEG, and I know there's a lot of partners that have gotten very creative and gone around how they do that segmentation through AD. Our fear, and I would say our legal team's fear, is that some kind of security breach is, you know, happens in a very large network, which case, and then Microsoft is being held. If we show support, that we'd be held accountable for that. That's actually the reason behind why we don't support it today. That said, I think to, and I don't know if you said it, but I know you and I've had the discussion several times, is if I look at the model that Exchange set, SharePoint followed suit, you know, we look at across our office apps, we understand the need for multi-tenancy in the, at the link server level. So we're trying to think about how do we take this, and Stephen mentioned tenant ID as the really the differentiator, why we can do it in LHP and why we can't do it in server, right? That's one of the ideas we're looking at, is there a way to be able to, let's say, multi-tenantize link server in a way that we can support and feel good about, feel secure on, and obviously our partners feel secure about. That's part of the strategy that we're trying to put together. And like I said, there's good precedent for that. The hard part for us is to figure out, you know, being that it's a real-time communication, again, we think about all these different features that are sort of single-tenant focused today within Link Server. How many of those break if we throw multi-tenant in there? And I'll give you a good example of that is when we tried to do RGS, the response groups, through the white paper that Stephen mentioned, there's only one routing method that works in that because every other one breaks our single-tenant, breaks the multi-tenant nature of LHP. We're fearful of that, so we have to work through the engineering process to be able to sort of go back and say, whatever restriction is keeping the single tenant, we'd have to be able to engineer that out. So that is one of the strategies we're looking at.
Okay. So then a follow-up to that is, if the partner does go LHP v2, that's the route they want to head right now, there's ambiguity within Microsoft, decision coming via WPC, will there be an upgrade path for me if I go LHP to v2, and you're not going to tell me I have to redeploy the flag?
Honestly, I would say I can't speak to what that path would be. And I heard somebody laugh like, he's going to color it here. I don't know what that future thing is. Our goal is to be able to create a migration path that's as painless as possible. Whether that means, you know, I look at people that went from V1 to V2. That was not an easy process. We learned a lot from that. So I think we can take some of the knowledge and some of the intelligence within our product group to say, let's make it as painless as possible. Even if that's a, you know, if we think about what some of that, what the roadmap might be in concerns with interaction with Link Online or some things like that. But I don't think we know enough to be able to say totally, no, it's going to be a flip a switch and you're done. I don't think
right.
We know
there'll
that.
Be guidance.
There'll be guidance.
We're absolutely committed to providing that guidance on where, you know, what the next thing looks like and how to get there. And specifically for those that have made the investment in LHP V2, we will make the investment to help that whatever that migration or path looks like.
In Microsoft, we talk about internally tracked commitments, what we hold ourselves to attain within a quarter, within a half year, within a year. Two of them I have for by in June is they have a roadmap and they have a migration path. So it's in there, it's already in our team, about being able to provide that guidance. I thought you were asking how difficult it's going to be. We don't know yet. So.
But there is no expiration on support. I mean, because, you know, at DC, cool.
Yeah, and so LHP will qualifies it for full support at least through 2018 standard support, and extended support is completely available after that. We've actually been thinking about what can we do some extra things again to just show that we've got a long term commitment here. But absolutely, you know, it's
10,000 voice customers.
It is, yeah, absolutely. So we don't want to for those to be in jeopardy. We want it.
Let me address one question that, and Steve and I were talking about this before. You know, I would say, I'm trying to think of a grade I would give it, and being optimistic, let's say a C plus for the documentation that exists out there on LHP. Huge room for improvement there. And so one of the other commitments that I'm working on is to be able to go back. And one of the problems I run into is because we don't have a large install base yet. I do get emails from you guys that say, hey, this doesn't work the way it's described in the deployment guide or the way one of the tech debt articles work. And a lot of my job is to go back and apply that. Is that true or is that a configuration issue? Is that a network issue? There's a bunch of other things that it could be. And so one of the other ideas that I'm looking at and trying to kind of get my brain wrapped around is building some type of pack or some type of trusted group of partners that can come back and say, and we talked about this a couple months ago before the holidays with some of the, when we had a call down, is that being able to have something that I can put out there and say, hey, I'm hearing that this doesn't work, you know, step X, Y, Z in the deployment guide or this article, to have somebody go, no, that does work, we did it this way, I think that's more valuable than me trying to go back and figure it out. So instead of approaching it, sort of trying to go back and tackle the whole deployment guide, go back and actually test certain scenarios and be able to do that. The other thing happens is that as we go through these CU upgrades and we're testing them and now being able to deploy those on the LHP servers, there's going to be functionality that changes. And so being able to also have that feedback that like, yeah, I plugged it in, I tried it. I tried to do video with Skype and it didn't work or it did work or whatever. That's new thinking for us to be able to approach it a little bit different than just a static deployment guide that sits out there. Because I agree with Steven's appraisal that it's probably not even a C+. There's some work to be done there. So. So you're talking about split domain.
Yes.
Yeah. So, So I will say we've made more traction in the last 2 weeks than I've seen probably in the last 6 months. And the reason for that was that we were able to really bring this back to home for our core engineering to our developers to really get very specific on the use case scenarios. I wouldn't say that the partners were shy about giving us those use case scenarios before, but I think the information kind of hit a perfect storm. There was a couple escalations that went with it, which always seemed to help. And I'm just being honest about it, but that does tend to drive it. But the real piece that came back was that we're seeing the exact same problem within our own dedicated environment, Office 365 dedicated. And so being able to say, okay, we got a partner problem, we need to be able to tackle that, we got our own cloud problem, we need to be able to tackle that. And I've actually seen some great traction. Where we're at right now is we're actually plugging it into a lab and looking at being able to come back and say prescriptive advice about this is what we're calling split domain, here's the expectation on the use case scenarios. And then once we have that and we can go out and test that scenarios, we'll actually be able to build documentation based on that. Yeah, I'm actually very excited because it's been one that's, we do, yeah. Yeah, it's a big problem. I mean, to be honest, and I don't mean it's a big problem, it's varied. I mean, it's a complex problem. Because it actually involves both changes in AD as well as being able to do link routing. So it's not a simple task to be able to resolve it. Otherwise, I'm sure all the partners would have figured it out by now. So, but that said, I agree. I think the right resources are now focused on it, and we're moving very, very quickly.
Yeah, I think we're running.
All right, so we'll be, we've got list resources here, and we'll be at the Ask the Experts down the hall later. So thank you all very much, both for your partnership and today.